Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos, Lamed Hey. We're on Lamed Almed Beis. We're about halfway down the Amud, a little bit less than that. We're going to be starting this morning with the words Amar Rav Papa. It's about a third of the way down in the Amud. Let's get underway. We are in the middle of a lengthy discussion in the Gemara here. The beginning of the third parak of Ksuvos deals extensively with what happens when you're on the intersection of Makos and Mamon. What happens when you violate an Avera, which is going to both warrant you to have to pay and to have to receive makos. So what happens under those circumstances? So, if we can, just a quick introduction, just a little bit of a chazar of what we've been doing up until now. So first, the first two amorim that we really spent time with is Ula and Rav Yochanan. Ula says that generally speaking, when it becomes a choice between makos and mamon, so you go with mamon, not makos. And meaning the Ula and Rav Yochanan are both going to assume that's one of the two. It's not going to be both. And we have a drasha that supports that idea. Mishum risha achas atam echayvo. V'i atam echayvo shei rishayos. That a person cannot be held accountable for two different punishments for one crime. So, and then it's just a question of which one is going to be the favorite punishment. Now, just as even a further step backwards, just to remind each other, so there is a concept of kimle b'derabimine, which is kimle b'derabimine. We know is that when there are two punishments and one is definitely harsher than the other, so the one that's harsher is going to be the one that's going to be executed. And I say that with the double entendre, meaning let's say for example it's misa and mamon. So there, as a no-brainer, misa is going to override mamon. So that we know for sure, and we learned that we have a drasha for that, right? V'im lo yaso anesh anoshi anesh. Okay, so that we know for sure, and that's the principle of kimlein b'derabimine, and we're all familiar with. However, when the two punishments kind of are existing side by side, for example, makos and mamon. So when you're looking at either receiving lashes or having to pay, so there it's no clear favorite in terms of which one is the harsher of the two. You know, in other words, and everyone's going to give you their opinion of in terms of which one is the harsher of the two. But under those circumstances, so now what do I do? Where I am basically looking at two punishments, where there's no clear harsher of the two punishments. So which one do you favor with? So we started off with Ula. Ula says it's going to be Mammon, not Malchus. Rav Yochanan says just the opposite. It's going to be Malchus, not Mammon. So that's where we spent a good amount of time in the beginning of this discussion. And the reason why we're having the discussion here in the third parak is because of what seems to be a skira between the Mishnah here in Ksuvos and the Mishnah Makos. The Mishnah here in Ksuvos says that if a man is ma'anes a woman, and let's say, for example, it's a chosa, let's say it's a sister. So a sister is an isakaris, and it's a lav, in which if you were to receive a warning, you're going to get malchus. So our Mishnah says that you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay knas, and not just knas, you're going to have to pay all the payments. When one person assaults another person. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Mako says that when a man has relations with a sister, in addition to many other of the other forbidden relationships, so there's going to be a Makos. So the Mishnah in Ksuva says Mamon. The Mishnah in Makos says Makos. So, and it can't be both. So how do I resolve between the two Mishnayos? That has been our overarching question. So, according to Ula, the answer is going to be Mamon. It's always going to be Mamon. The Mishnah Makos. Okay, the Mishnah Makos is difficult, and we addressed that earlier. Rav Yochanan will tell you that that you're going to get Makos and not Mamon. What about our Mishnah over here? Okay, so Rav Yochanan had an answer for our Mishnah over here. Again, I'm not going to go through everything right now. This is just a general background to where we got to now. So those are been so far the two principal positions that we've been entertaining, that of Ula and that of Rav Yochanan. Then in yesterday's daf, we introduced something new, and that is the opinion of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish will tell you, do you know who the Mishnahs are filing like? The Mishnahs are filing like the Shita of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says, Loke Umishalim. When it comes to Malchus and Tashlumim, so the two of them can coexist. Rameir's of the position that you can get Malchus and you can also have to pay as well. So that's Lokin Umishalim. And Reish Lakish will say that the author of our Mishnah is in fact following the position of Rebbe Meir. Okay, and then one more Amara that we're going to be entertaining that we covered yesterday, and that's the opinion of Rabba, which we saw on the very bottom of Lamed Amud Aleph. So Rabba says that if we're just talking about Knas, so then Knas can coexist with another punishment as well. Why? If you look at the very bottom of Lamed Amud Aleph, we did this yesterday, Rabba Amar La'olam Tovech Ha'idei Atzmo, that the tficha is done on your own. Now you remember, you recall, this was addressing a brisa, the brisa that in which a person stole and then compounded the stealing with either selling or shechting. We're going to focus right now on shechting. So he stole and he shechted. So that is what's called after the geneva. So then geneva v'tavach, and under those circumstances, and on top of that, he did that on Shabbos as well. And now, the question was, well, if he did it on Shabbos, so shechting on Shabbos is obviously a malach on Shabbos. So how can he violate Shabbos, which would come with it a misa bidei adam, and on top of that also have to pay as well? So what Rabba introduced us to is that if we're just looking at the kanas, and we're only looking at the kanas, so then kanas can coexist. Kanas can coexist with another punishment as well. Why? Because kanas is a chiddush. Look at the top of Lamed Amud Beis. We did this yesterday. V'meir loka mishalem islay. So meis umishalem leislay v'shani hani. So the idea is that if we're just talking about knas, meaning not tashlumin but knas, and again we did this yesterday, it's important that we recognize the difference. Meaning tashlumin is anything compensatory. If I cause somebody a loss, I stole something, I damaged something, right? I was a custodian over something, and I did not hold to my responsibilities. Whatever the case is, if we're talking about compensation, that's tashlumim, and that cannot coexist with misa. Ein misa v'tashlumim, meaning you're only going to be receiving one of the two and not both. And obviously, if it's misa and tashlumim, misa is going to overshadow the tashlumim. However, knas is anything which is punitive. Punitive means that it's beyond compensation. The Torah imposes a fine. So under those circumstances, what Rabba now is arguing is that knas can coexist with any other punishment, even misa. So that means to say that if I have knas and misa, that the two of them can coexist, and that means to say that let's say I stole an animal. Now the stealing itself had to have been done before Shabbos, because for the act of stealing, obviously the principle of the animal that I need to pay, that's compensatory, that's tashlumim. So that cannot have occurred on Shabbos, but let's say now after I stole it during the week, and then I shecht it on Shabbos, so when I shecht it on Shabbos, so now we're looking at just the Knas together with the Misa. Knas and Misa can coexist. This is Rabba's understanding within the Shita Rebbe Meir. And now, according to that, it works out, meaning that that our Mishnayos are following the Shita of Rebbe Meir, where you can have Misa and Knas and they can coexist. Good. So this is going to be basically our fourth Amora in terms of how to address the steers between the Mishnayos and Sufis and the Mishnayos and Makos. So to line up the Amoraim that we saw basically sequentially since the beginning of the Sugya, so it was Ula, it was Rav Yochanan, it was Reish Lakish, and then yesterday we ended off with Rabba. Okay, we had just one more end note just to go together with Rabba. We're gonna learn a halacha from Rav Papa, and then from that point going forward, we're gonna learn some. Obviously, we're gonna learn something new today, but we're gonna basically focus today on Tana de Bechizkiya. But that's coming up a little bit later from now. We're gonna get there in just a moment. So I'm Rav Papa. Okay, so in the Gemara itself, we're gonna continue where we left off yesterday. We're on Lamed Aleph Beis, and we're about a third of the way down. And the Gemara starts off, Amar Papa Haisa Paragnuva Lo V'Tavcha B'Shabbos. So let's say you stole a cow and you shecht it on Shabbos. Chayiv Shekvar Nischayiv B'Gneva Kodem Sheyavo L'Idei Yisur Shabbos. So the Gneva occurred before Shabbos. Again, for the Gneva, that's the Tashlamim. That's the principle. That already is the, that's just basic compensation. And so over here, when you're shechting on Shabbos, so now that's just Knas. And again, Knas is going to coexist together with the Misa. Haisa parshu lo tvacha b'Shabbos. So let's say the following. Let's say you borrow a cow. So now we're contrasting the stealing of a cow with the borrowing of a cow. So you borrowed a cow, and now obviously with the borrowing of the cow, so the expectation, of course, is that you return the cow. It goes without saying. However, instead of returning the cow, so what you did is that you shechted it. Okay, now shechting something that you borrowed, so we have another word to describe that, and that's called stealing. I mean, in other words, obviously within the terms of the agreement of borrowing, so you were only allowed to borrow an item, you were expected to return it in its original state. So once you shecht it, so that basically is an act of stealing. So here now we're saying the following chiddush, and that is that if I borrowed a cow, obviously before Shabbos, and then I shecht it on Shabbos, so now when do all the punishments kick in? Meaning obviously you stole, together with the fact that you stole, you also shecht it as well. So when did all that kick in? So we're going to basically reverse engineer. We're going to first learn the halacha, and then we're going to fit in the svar. So the halacha is, Pater, that you are not going to be liable for monetary compensation. Now, Amalei Rav Acha Breda Rav Le Rav Ashi Rav Papa Para Asalash Meinan. So the Gemara says, now, I don't understand. What did Rav Papa add to our discussion? Para Amalei Rav Papa Shula Asalash Meinan. So the Gemara says, well, as far as the first halacha of Rav Papa is concerned, so we knew that already. Again, the idea that if it's just Kenas, Kenas can coexist with Misa. That we knew already. So, but the second halach of Rav Papa, the borrowing of the cow, that becomes the chiddush. The Gemara now explains. Sakadas chamina hov amar Rav Papa misha mishichu udis chayev lei b'mezono say misha hachinami misha she'ila is chayev be'on seha. So kamash malan. So the Gemara says like this. Look, when you borrow a cow, so a cow happens to be something where you obviously, as a shoal, as a borrower, so you're obviously borrowing it to benefit from it, but you obviously have to take care of it. So when is your obligation to feed the animal begin? Obviously begins at the point of she'ela. Okay, so that part we know. Now, when you borrow something, you're going to be chayav for anything that occurs to the animal, and ones occurs, so you are going to be liable. When does liability begin? This is a really sharp question, meaning that you are on the hook for anything that happens to the animal, even if it was an ones. When does that begin? Does that begin at the point when you actually were shoal it? Or does it begin when the ones actually occurs? Now, for our purposes over here, it's going to make all the difference. Consider what you did is that you borrowed the item before Shabbos, and then you shechted it on Shabbos. Now, the shechting is the ones. Now, you're the one who created the ones, meaning you stole it by shechting it, but the point is that when did that ones liability kick in? If it kicked in at the time when you actually, at the beginning, at the origination of the borrowing, so that means to say now that the tashlumin goes back to that point in time, and now when you shecht it, we're only looking at the knas. On the other hand, the other way to look at it, which is clearly the way Rav Papa looks at it, is that no. When does liability begin? Liability begins at the time when the ones actually occurs. Okay, and if I can try to just sharpen this point a little bit better, meaning obviously, when you borrow something, you're liable. But that's like a latent liability, meaning that if something were to happen, then you're going to become liable. But it doesn't mean that liability kicks in right at the beginning of when you borrow something. It means that if when something or some mishap happens, occurs, it's at that point in time, then you're going to be liable. And that's exactly the point. Kamashman, the chiddush is that no, liability occurs, your obligation occurs at the point when the liability actually happens. Since you shechted on Shabbos, so now everything kicks in at that point in time. The tashlumim kicks in at that point in time, the kenas kicks in at that point in time, and because you did it on Shabbos, and because of kimlei, so therefore you're going to be pater from the tashlumim. Amarava. We're going to say over basically the same thing, but we just did Rav Papa. Now we're going to do it b'shem Rava. Amar Rava hinech lemaviyam parasha ula. So let's say dad died, and as part of the estate, he left them a cow. Now the cow was borrowed, meaning the father borrowed the cow. So mishamshim ba'kol yemei she'ilasa. So as long as the term of the borrowing is still intact, meaning as long as we're still within the period where it was borrowed for, I don't know, let's say dad borrowed it for a month and 15 days into the borrowing agreement, so he died. So for the remainder of the term, they could use it. Mesa and Chayv and Bone Seha. They are not going to be Chayv and Ones. Now, in of itself, by the way, that's really interesting. So why are they not going to be Chayv and Ones? They themselves didn't borrow it. They're just, I'm not trying to be cute over here, but they were borrowing it from the father, meaning, okay, it's a little bit difficult to fully wrap my head around this, but the idea is that since they're not the principal shoel, so therefore they don't take on the full liability. So Mesa and Chayiv Mevon Seham. Kisvurin Shal Avim Hu Tzvachu V'Achlu. Now, let's say when dad died, they didn't know that it was a borrowed animal. And they shechted the animal, they ate the animal, Misham and Demei Basa Bezol. So now what they're going to have to do is that they're going to have to pay back that which they ate, meaning that they benefited from the animal, and for that they're going to have to pay back. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's Basa Bezol, it's going to be at a discounted rate. Rashi points out it's going to be 2/3 of the actual cost. Again, on a different occasion, we'll explain a little bit better why it is that they're not going to be paying dollar for dollar from that which they ate. Now, there are two halachas that we just learned together in the name of Rava. Number one is that if they inherit a borrowed animal, meaning so what they could do is they could use the animal for the duration of the borrowed agreement. And the second halacha is that if they didn't know it was a borrowed animal and they shechted it, so then they're going to have to reimburse at a discounted rate. Those are two halachas that we just learned together. And then, now let's say, in addition to the animal, dad also left property as well. So if he left property, so what the property now does is that it secures the obligation, so then they're going to have to pay. Now, in which case are we talking about? The first case or the second case? So slightly unclear. And in fact, the Gemara says, could go either way. Some learn it on the first case, some learn it on the second case. Now, if you're learning it on the first case, so for sure it's going to apply to the latter case. Meaning that when property secures against a borrowed animal and an ones occurs, so and the property now secures it, so for sure in the case where they go out of their way to shech the animal, so for sure now the property is going to be serving as security against the more egregious act. Meaning, obviously, in the second case, it's much more egregious. They actually shechted the animal. So if property is securing in the first case, where all they're doing is just simply borrowing the animal, in other words, using the end of the term of the borrowing, and an onus occurs, so for sure it's going to apply in the second case, which is more egregious. And then upligi de rapapa, and that certainly does not conform to the shita of rapapa. Rapapa says is that when does liability occur? It occurs when the onus occurs, which is obviously after the father has died. If in fact we learn that the property secures even against the first case, then it would not be in agreement with Rapapa. But if you only learn that the case where the land is securing is in a case where the kids didn't realize it was borrowed animal and they shechted it, so now they're going to have to pay back. So if the land is securing in that case, but not in the first case, you know why it doesn't secure in the first case? Because in the first case, they're in agreement with Rapapa, meaning that when the father borrowed it, so the onus does not start at that point in time. You know when the onus kicks in? Only when the onus actually occurs. But that's after the son's already acquired the land, and at that point in time, no longer serving as security for the animal. Okay, so basically, Rava may or may not agree to Rapapa. It's unclear, because Rava spoke out two halachas, and then he says that the land is going to secure the animal against against any liability, but it's unclear whether it was going in the first case or the second case. And then, depending on which way you learn it, it could be that he's either in agreement or disagreement with Rav Papa. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end of just a little bit of a tangent that we really should have finished off yesterday, but now we finished it off today. And that brings us now to basically a recap. Well, not yet. We're almost at the point of recap. The end of today's daf, we're really going to be recapping the entire sugya. But meanwhile, right now, where do we stand? So we have a number of basic approaches in terms of how to deal with the Mishnah. It happens to be that right now we're going to be focusing only on Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. So let's reintroduce ourselves. So according to Rav Yochanan, what happens in the case of Makus and Mamon? So Rav Yochanan will tell you that in the case of Makus and Mamon, so it will be Makus, not Mamon. And what Reish Lakish told, what Reish Lakish will tell you is that the Mishnayos are going like Rebbe Meir, where Rebbe Meir says that there could be Misa. Sorry, let's do that again. Let's do it correctly. There's going to be Makos and Mamon, meaning Rav Meir's of the position that the two are not mutually exclusive. They can, the two punishments can in fact coexist, and you're going to have Makos and you're going to have Mamon. Okay, so those are the two approaches. There was also Ula, and there was also Rabba, but right now we're focusing on Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. And the reason why we're going to be focusing on them is because the Gemara now is going to be making an extraordinarily fundamental point, which is coming up right now. We are just Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, and we're towards the bottom of the Amud. It's about a dozen lines from the bottom. It's the last word on the line, Bishlama. So Bishlama, Rav Yochanan, Amar Kareish Lakish, Tekamukim Laka Rabbanan. So now, as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, so he does not favor Reish Lakish because in addressing the stira between the two Mishnayos. It's not a stira between the two Mishnayos. It just happens to be that one Mishnah says Mamon, the other Mishnah says Malkus, and how can you have both? So Rav Yochanan says, in limited circumstances, in other words, you can't have both. Sorry. Rav Yochanan starts off with the more fundamental position, it can't be both. And which one is, generally speaking, going to be the favored punishment? The principal punishment is going to be Malkus, not Mamon. Our Mishnah over here. Okay, so our Mishnah is going to be a case where there's no Malkus. Okay, so so that is the Shita of Rav Yochanan. Now the Gemara points out he likes that Pshat better because it now follows that we have Mishnayos that follow the Shita of the Chachamim, meaning instead of saying that a Mishnah is going like a Das Yachid, a Shita's Yachid of Rav Meir, so obviously the Mishnayos, the better approach would be that it's following the sheet of the Chachamim. Ela Reish Lakish, my time alone, Amakar Rav Yochanan. But why doesn't Reish Lakish subscribe to Rav Yochanan? So, in other words, for Reish Lakish to say that and to make sense of the Mishnayos, it's going like Rebbe Meir. On one hand, it's a great solution. On the other hand, the Mishnayos are going like a Shitas Yachid, meaning Rebbe Meir is not the majority viewpoint. The idea that Malkus and Mamon can coexist and which is only the Shita of Rav Meir, to the exclusion of the Shita of the Chachamim. And now, yes, it's true, the Mishnayos now work, meaning our Mishnah says Mamon, the Mishnah Malkus says Malkus, and both Mishnayos are going like Rav Meir. So on one hand, great, on the other hand, it's going like a Das Yachid. Why is Reish Lakish prefer to say that our Mishnah is going like Rav Meir, which on one hand works, but on the other hand, really limits the Mishnayos to only the Shita of Rav Meir, and not conform to the majority position of the Chachamim? So that is a little bit strange. But Amar Lecha. But what Reish Lakish would tell you is the following: Kevin Dilu Asra Bei Pater Ki Lasra Bei Nami Pater. What Reish Lakish will tell you is that, do you know that according to the Chachamim, Malkus would be a Pator whether you get Malkus or even if you don't get Malkus? Meaning, as long as there is a punishment of Malkus which is available for that particular Isser, so then it creates a Patur. And Valzula Tamayo and the Gemara says that this is consistent with their general position. Dechiyas Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael, and here's how he presents it. Chayvim, Yisra Shogim v'chayvim, Malkus Shogim v'davar acher. Let's say you violate an Isser that carries with it Misa. Let's say you violate an Isser that carries with it Malkus. In addition to that, there's also money. Davar acher over here means money. So now, either Misa and Mamon, or Malchus and Mammon, Rav Yochanan Amar Chai, Reish Lakish Amar Pater. And now, a basic machlokus between the Amoraim, Rav Yochanan says that you're going to be Chayev. Why? Because for Reish Lakish, sorry, let's start with Rav Yochanan. For Rav Yochanan, so what can Beis Din not do? They can't give two punishments. So when there are two punishments lined up, then and only then, Malchus and Misa and Malchus are going to override the money. However, and let me just say it a little bit better and a little bit and a little bit sharper. Misa or Malchus, not and. Misa or Malchus is going to go ahead and override the money. However, according to Rav Yochanan, let's say Misa's the crime would have brought about Misa, but there were no witnesses, there was no warning, whatever. For whatever reason, Misa is not going to be administered. Alternatively, in the case of Malchus, let's say there were no witnesses, there was no warning, whatever the case is, and the Malchus is not being administered. So, according to Rav Yochanan, so even though the Isser would have brought about Misa, the Isser would have brought about Malchus, but if the Onish is not actually there, so then it's only money. Beis Din's going to impose money. And what Reish Lakish will tell you is that no. Reish Lakish will tell you is that as long as the Isser could have resulted in Misa, as long as the Isser could have resulted in Malchus, so then that is going to be a Ptur of Mammon. Let me just put it in other terms. According to Rav Yochanan, when we say a Ptur, we're focusing on the Onish. One Onish paters another Onish. The Ptur is created from the actual Onish itself. And what Reish Lakish would argue is that no, we know what creates the Ptur. The Isser creates the Ptur. As long as the Isser carries with it an Onish, even though you didn't receive the actual Onish, the Isser carries with it the Onish, the Isser creates the Ptur. Okay, just, I put it in other terms, maybe it helps. Rav Yochanan Amar Chayev Da Lo Asur Bei Reish Lakish Amar Pater Came Di Ilo Asur Bei Pater Kol Ekilo Asur Bei Nami Pater, and the Gemara gives a pretty straightforward explanation, and that is for Rav Yochanan. So the only when you received the warning, and only when you're going to be receiving the punishment of either Misa or of Malchus, then and only then are you going to get the Ptur from Mammon. But according to Reish Lakish, no. Since if you would have gotten warned, you would have gotten either Misa or Malchus. So even if you don't get warned, but since it contains in it a latent punishment of Misa or Malchus, that's enough to create Ptur. So Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan V'lo Yason Anoshi Anesh. So Reish Lakish now says to Rav Yochanan, I can't believe that you don't agree with me. Consider the following. Here we go back to the pasuk. This has been a staple in the discussion of Kim Leib Derabbi Mine. So again, two people are fighting, and a woman steps in, and she gets hit. And v'lo yaso, now if she doesn't die, so I know she anesh, so that is going to result in financial penalty. And my love, ason mamish, so the Gemara says, now, isn't it talking about where that we're talking about where she actually dies? And meaning that what the requirement of payment is all going to be a function of whether either she dies or she doesn't die. Meaning, as far as the perpetrator is concerned, is he chayiv misa? Is he not chayiv misa? Irrelevant, totally irrelevant. The only thing that is going to either commit or exempt him from having to pay is whether or not she dies or she doesn't die. So my love asam mamish, and Rav Yochanan would say, lo, din asam. Rav Yochanan's response would be, no. The Torah is not talking about where the fatality itself either creating or exempting from the payment. It's the din asam, meaning it's the question of whether or not he's actually going to receive a punishment. Igadamri, now we're going to do the same thing, meaning an exchange here between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. We're just going to go and flip it around. Eishvei Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish here. Now Rav Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish. V'lo yason. Anoshi anesh. My love din ason. Lo ason mamish. Okay. And we just, same back and forth, just over here. It's Rav Yochanan assuming that it's talking about din ason, and Reish Lakish saying, no, it's ason mamish. Okay. Where are we right now? At an unbelievably fascinating place within the world of Kim Leib Rabbi Minei, where we, right now, the way we have it, now in a moment we're about to change slightly, but right now where we have it, is that according to Rav Yochanan, what creates Ptur? Only the Onish itself. So if there's an Onish of Misa, and there's an Onish of Malkus, then and only then it creates the Ptur of Mammon. Mashenkin, according to Reish Lakish, no. It's not the Onish that creates the Ptur, it's the Isser that creates the Ptur. Meaning, as long as the Isser carries with it an Onish of Misa, you didn't necessarily get it, doesn't matter. As long as the Isser contains the Onish of Malkus, that is what's going to create the Ptur. That's where we stand right now in terms of the intersection of two Onshin, and now the Gemara is going to fine-tune our understanding just a little bit. So now, who, when it comes to Chayve Misas, when it comes to an Isser that carries with it the death penalty, who is of the position that even if you don't receive the actual death penalty, that you're not going to be exempt? Let's put it in other terms. Again, let's simplify. Meaning, what Rav is about to teach us is that everyone agrees that when it comes to Chayve Misos, when it comes to an act that carries with it the death penalty, that's going to be putter for money, even if you don't get the death penalty. Nobody argues with that. How come nobody argues with that? Vatanda Bechizkia, because of Tanda Bechizkia. And this is, in the Kimlei discussion, one of the most fundamental points, and admittedly, it took the Gemara just a little bit to get here, meaning we've been discussing now Kimlei and Mishum Risha Achas, we've discussed it now for almost a week, and it is funny that it comes up all the way here on Daf Lamed Hey, when the discussion started all the way back on Chavtes and Lamed. Okay, but still, here we go, Tanda Bechizkia. So the Gemara over here is citing a couple of psukim that are found in Vayikra. Actually, one pasuk in Vayikra. Maka behema. This is Perek of Dalet. Maka behema yishameno, maka adam yumas. Right? So you hit an animal, so you have to pay. Maka adam, you hit a person, meaning and kill the person, so you must, you're put to death. Okay, so. Now, over here, this serves as a hekesh, meaning why is the Torah putting these two side by side in the same pasuk together? Very simple. Let's start off with the hitting of an animal. Now, the hitting of an animal is going to create one and only one liability, and that, of course, is money. And as we know, we've gone over time and again, when it comes to monetary liability for damages that are caused, it doesn't matter whether you were an ones, a mazit, a shogeg. In other words, what the circumstances were, it doesn't matter. You pay under all circumstances. Adam muad la'olam. So when it comes to hitting an animal, so there's a liability under any and all circumstances. So now, af maka adam. So now let's go to the second half of the pasuk. Second half of the pasuk talks about killing a man. So lo tachluk bo bein b'shogi bein b'mezid bein b'im niskavim l'shein niskavim bein derech yirid l'derech aliyah l'chayvo mamon ela. So, but when it comes to killing a man, so here now we're going to go in the same point, but obviously the opposite direction. Meaning, when you kill a man, so it doesn't matter whether you did it b'mezid or b'shogeg. Now, of course, it makes a difference whether you did it b'mezid or b'shogeg vis-a-vis the death penalty. But that's not the point of Tanda Bechizkia. Tanda Bechizkia is coming to tell me that in the event that you kill a person, the Isser is now something which would have brought about an onish of Mises Beis Din, again, if there were witnesses and warning. Therefore, you're always going to be exempt from money. Let's say it again. In the case of hitting an animal, you're always going to be obligated to pay. When hitting and killing a person, you're always going to be exempt. Now, how come we're going in the opposite direction? We have to go in the opposite direction. Consider. When you kill a person intentionally with witnesses and a warning, so there we know as a given. It's a tenet, it's a basic tenet, that if you're going to actually be put to death, so you don't pay. Right? In other words, that's Kimlei. So we already know that there are cases of exemption, so using the Hekesh now, what Tanda Bechizkia says, is that since there's a case of exemption, we're always going to go with exemption. Meaning, since by hitting an animal, we're always going to go with liability, So, and the Torah now puts together in the same pasuk, hitting an animal and hitting a person. So when you hit and kill a person, there's always going to be exemption. This is what's called Tanya Bei Chizkiya. And what we're learning together now, according to Tanya Bei Chizkiya, is that Kim Leib Derabamine, when the harsher punishment is Misa Bidei Adam, is always going to create exemption, even if it's B'Shogeg, even if it was done unintentionally. So, and what Rav is pointing out is that this position, Tanya Bei Chizkiya, is simply irrefutable. Nobody argues with Tanya Bei Chizkiya. So Elokias Rav and Amar. So fine. So now all we're going to do now is take the machlokas of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, which is really the crux of today's daf, and we're just going to fine tune it a little bit. So Chayve Misa Shogegin Kolei Amalo Pligi De Peturin Ki Pligi BeChayve Makas Shogim VeDavar Acher. Rav Yochanan Amar Chayve Misa Itkish Chayve Makas Lo Itkish and Reish Lakish Amar Pater Beferish Rips Torah Chayve Makas Ki Chayve Misas. Okay. So here we are. And that is that when it comes to Chayvei Misa Shogegin, Tanya Bei Chizkiya, Kim Leibed Rabbi Minei, it creates a patur. You're not going to pay money. Nobody disputes that. Everybody agrees to that. So where is now the machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, where it's not Chayvei Misa Shogegin, but rather it's Chayvei Malkus Shogegin? You violate an Isser that has with it Malkus, but you didn't do it deliberately. Or even if you did it deliberately, but there were no witnesses. In other words, there's no actual punishment of Malkus, but the Isser would have brought about the punishment of Malkus. So, if, let's say, it's Chayve Malkus Shogegin, are you going to be Pater from the Mammon? Depends who you ask. Rav Yochanan says, you're not going to be Pater. You're going to be Chayev. And Reish Lakish says, no, you're going to be Pater. Now, the reason behind Reish Lakish is, since the Torah Patters you by Misa, the Torah patters you by Malkus as well. So Heichan Rib Sator. Now the last thing we just read in the Gemara is that for Reish Lakish, Befirsh Rib Sator, Chayve Malkus ke Chayve Misas. Chayve Malkus and Chayve Misas are the same. What does that mean? They're the same. Where Heichan Rib Sator? That's the next question of the Gemara. So Amar Abaye Asya Rasha Rasha, Rav Amar Asya Maka Maka. So Abaye says we learn it out based on Xerishava Rasha Rasha. Now this should sound familiar. We're going to hear this a number of times throughout Shas. Okay. The reason why I'm going to have Bekis on this is because I just gave Shira on this. So the anyway, according to Abaye, go to Makos Daf Hey, go to Sanhedrin Daf Yud, and you're going to see again and again throughout Shas. Abaye tells us that we have Gzeira Shava, or we have a couple of psukim in the Torah describing Rishus both by Makos and by Misa. By Makos, I'll start with Misa. By Misa, by Midbar Perek Lamed Hey, V'lo Sichu Kofer LaNefesh Rotech Asher Hu Rasha Lamus. So you have Rasha by Misa, by Ritzicha, and then by Makos, V'haya Im. This is Parshas Kiseitze Per Dvarim Perek Chavei. V'haya Im Bin Hakos HaRasha. So you have Rasha by Misa, Misas Bidei Adam, and you have Rasha by Makos. And what the Torah is telling us through this Gezeira Shava is, they're the same. Just like by Misa, there is a Petur, Chayve Misa Shogegin is going to be Pater, so too by Malkus, Chayve Malkus Shogegin is also going to create a Petur Mammon as well. That's Abaye's understanding. And Rava says, no, Maka, also Gzeira Shava, different Gzeira Shava. Okay. Let's just leave it at that. I have my own questions, but let's just leave it at that. So where are we right now? So we have fine-tuned the machlokas between Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. Chayve Misa Shogegin, we no longer have a debate. Everyone's in agreement. Chayve Misa Shogegin is going to create a patur from having to pay. This is Tanya Bei Chizkiya, and both Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish agree. The only point of disagreement between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan is, are we in fact going to say the same thing by Chayve Malkus Shogegin? Where Rav Yochanan will tell you that there's no patur. The patur is only where you do in fact get hasra and you do actually receive malchus. And Reish Lakish says no, that even if there's no hasra, as long as the isser is one in which you would have received malchus, that's enough to create a patur of mammon. Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye Hai Maka. So the Gemara now is just gonna cross a couple of T's, dot a couple of I's. When we when we speak of the Gzeres Shava of Rava. So when we say Makkah, which one are we referring to? Ilema Makkah Behemi Shaman Makkah Adam Yumas. So Hypoktalksiv. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's by murder, which is Chayve Misos based in. And right now we're looking for a Makkah that teaches us about Makkos. So Elahai Makkah. So Makkah Nefesh Behema Yishaman Nefesh Shachas Nefesh. So V'samich Lei V'ishki Ten Mum Ba'amiso Kasher Asa Ken Yaselo. So we're looking now at a series of psukim, one pasuk makan nefesh behema, that's the striking of an animal, where there you have to pay, and right next to it, ish ki itein mum ba'miso, a man hits another man. V'hai lav makihi, so the Gemara says, yeah, but the second pasuk is not using the word makah. Rava says it's exereshav of makah makah, so anan haka kamrinan. So the Gemara says, you're right, meaning it's not based on the Gzereshav of Makkah as much as it's based on the act of hitting, meaning in both places it describes an act of hitting. So the Gemara says, now that's funny, meaning just so that we're not all totally lost right now, all we're doing is just we're trying to flesh out Rava's drasha, Rava in explanation of Reish Lakish, that says that Makkos and Misa are on par with one another, so he's learning it out from Makkah Makkah. So the Gemara is making two clarification points. Number one, it's not a Gzereshava per se, it's the act of hitting, which is mentioned in two psukim. And number two, the act of hitting that results in Malkus is going to be the case where you hit, not an animal. For hitting an animal, you don't get Malkus. That's just payment. But the hitting of another person, you're going to get Malkus. So the Gemara says, okay, but on that, that also needs clarification. Yeah, when you hit another person, so v'chove b'chaver b'arto shlomim ho, right? Remember, according to everybody, you hit another person, so even though that's an isser, and even though that's malchus, but it's also mammon. And remember, even according to Rav Yochanan, when you hit another person, so we go with tashlomim, not with malchus. So the Gemara says, imeinu inyan l'akash yesh bo shava pruta, teneu inyan l'akash yesh bo shava pruta. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what we're gonna suggest over here, more than suggest, is that we're going to have to say over here is that we're talking about we hit another person and it didn't get to the threshold of a shava pruta. And as we already established, once it doesn't get to the threshold of a shava pruta, now there's no tashlumim, and if there's no tashlumim, so then we default back to the malchus. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's funny, because remember, what are we trying to learn from this? We're trying to learn that in a case where there's malchus and mammon, so the Makkos is going to override the mammon. But now, as we set up the case where you hit somebody, but it wasn't a shava pruta, so then there's no mammon. Meaning, if what we're trying to learn over here is that the Makkos is going to override the mammon, yeah, but over here, it's a case where there's no mammon. So the Gemara says, lo tricha, de machia, karashi rain delay. The Gemara says that what happened is that you hit a person, and you tore the clothing while you hit him. And so, and the hitting is, the actual bodily damage is less than a shava pruta. So for that, you're going to be receiving malchus. And for the tearing of his clothing, that's monetary damage, which you're going to be obligated to. But because the Torah now puts makah together, meaning the act of hitting together, so that comes to teach me that just like in the case of Misa, is going to override the mammon, so too the case of Malkus is going to override the mammon as well, meaning you won't have to pay in those circumstances. Okay. Hopefully, I explained it well. Hopefully, you're following well. It's a little bit ironic that it comes out now that within Rava's explanation of Reish Lakish, the whole source of Malkus going to be overriding mammon is coming from the case of Chova b'chavero, whatever. It's a little bit strange. It's a little bit of an irony. Chova b'chavero, meaning if you hit somebody where it is a shava pruta, of course you're going to pay and you're not going to get makos. But oddly enough, if you hit somebody where it's not a shava pruta, the actual bodily damage is not a shava pruta, so and now you're receiving makos, that makos is going to be overriding any other monetary obligation that you had. Okay. I know that part is a little bit complicated and hopefully explained it well, but it's a little bit ironic that Chova b'chaver now becomes the source of Petur for any other monetary obligation other than the actual bodily damage itself. Okay. Amalei Rav Chiya l'Rava ulatan de bechizkei da'amar. Maka adam maka behema. The Gemara now is just going to try for a moment to poke a hole at Tanda Bechizkiah. And this is where we're going to end today. And the we'll just finish off on this one point, and tomorrow we'll pick it up with Amalei Rav Papa. So we're going to poke a hole at Tanda Bechizkiah. Remember, Tanda Bechizkiah taught us that in the case of Chayvei Miso Shogegin and Mammon, so the Chayvei Miso Shogegin is going to override the Mammon, even though you're not actually receiving the punishment of Misa, nevertheless, you're going to be pater from Mammon. Kimle b'derabim minei, in the case of Misa, even when it is Shogeg. That's Tanda Bechizkiah. And how do you learn it? You learned it from the fact that the Torah, in one breath, in one pasuk, says, Maka behema yishamenu, maka adam yumas. And again, maka behema yishamenu, that's talking about even the case where you hit the animal, ben b'meizid, ben b'shogeg, doesn't matter. In other words, that's just simply nezek. And you're going to be chayv under all circumstances. When it comes to when it comes to makah adam, so in that case, yumas, in other words, you're going to be put to death, and under every circumstance, you're going to be potter. Good, that was the Tanda Bechizkiah. So, mimai debechol ksiv, aleka laflugei delma b'shabbos ksiv, debehema gufa ika l'iflugei. And how do I know that the case where you hit an animal is talking about a case where you hit the animal during the week? Maybe it's where a case where you hit the animal on Shabbos. Now, on Shabbos, there's obviously going to be a difference whether you did so b'mezid or b'shogeg. Meaning b'mezid, you're going to be pater from having to pay. B'shogeg, you're going to be obligated to have to pay. And maybe that's the case of the pasuk. So lo sakadach, the Gemara says no, that's not the case. Why dechsev? Maka behema yishamen and maka adam yumas. Again, we go back to the pasuk. Hechi dami delo aser bay. So maka adam yumas, maka adam amay yumas. No, it's just contextually. Look at the pasuk. Obviously, the pasuk is talking about where there's asra, because it says that if you hit a person, you're put to death. That's only with asra. So if we're talking about Shabbos and you were given asra, so yishamenu, you're going to pay, and of course you don't pay. In other words, that's a classic example of kimle b'derabim minei. So ella b'chol must be talking about during the week. Meaning, just simply structurally, since the two cases are put side by side, and since in the case of Adam it has to be behasra, so too in the case of behema it has to be behasra, and therefore it can't be on Shabbos, because if it were on Shabbos, so then obviously yishamen, you're not going to have to pay. Then obviously we would say kimle b'derabim minei, or to put it in other terms, simply put, the case is talking about during the week, not on Shabbos. And since it's talking about the week, now we just go back and plug in what we learned earlier this morning. Meaning, according to Tanya Bechizkiah, since the case of Adam, of Maka Adam Yishamenu is under all circumstances, Shogeg Mezid doesn't matter, you'll have to pay. So too, in the case of Maka Adam Yumas, meaning, and if there is a financial liability coming together with it, you're always going to be exempt. Okay. Good. Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. This, which really ends our daf today, but we're going to pause over here. This now is really going to represent a wonderful summary of basically the last week of the Gemara. So what I'll tell everybody for homework, myself included, it's just chaz of the last six plot of Gemara, meaning start on Chavtes, start with the Mishnah, and take us all the way over here, and go through the shitas of Ula, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rabba. Go through all four positions in terms of how to be miyashev the Mishnah here in the Mishnah Makos, and then what we're going to do is that we're going to have a lovely recap of the entire discussion, and that will formally end the Gemara's discussion regarding kimle b'derabim minei mishum risha achas atad mechayvo, right? A week's worth of Gemara having one of the most fundamental discussions in the Gemara about capping the amount of punishment that Beis Din can offer. Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, Mirza Shem, we pick it up.